And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherGazette.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to T-minus 30 days until your favorite collegiate football team takes the field at Huntington Bank Stadium against the Eastern Illinois. Luke, do you know what the Eastern Illinois' mascot of choice is? Or I suppose, do you know what Eastern Illinois is all about?
No, maybe we should see if I can even guess the color. I think the color is blue.
You certainly got there. I think they're the Eastern Illinois Panthers or something like that. Okay. But before I even say any more, if you have not gone back and listened to the previous episode, which is where I was able to finagle my way into a 25-minute conversation each with Gopher offensive coordinator Greg Harbaugh and the defensive coordinator Danny Collins, and I actually asked them questions you would want to know the answers to, I want you to stop the podcast or the YouTube, whatever you're doing right now, go mow your lawn, go for a walk, go get some stuff done around the house, put it on as you're, I don't know, putting the kids to bed, because their answers are going to be very important and stuff we're going to talk about here going forward before Luke and I get to preview everybody's favorite side of the ball. No, that is not Luke's special teams. That is the episode dedicated to today, which is the Golden Gopher offense, Mr. Buer.
Yeah, excited to talk about the offense. This is always one of the more popular episodes that we do. It's one that doesn't necessarily age poorly, because I would say that losses age poorly, wins age somewhat poorly, and previews age incredibly well. So, it's a fun conversation. It's one that I usually learn a lot from, because you are the one who holds all the knowledge, and I still have not read any of your offensive preview articles. So I'm coming in hot with the fan perspective tape. And I've read a lot of Gopher basketball coverage, over on Gopher Gazette. Both Ryan and Dan are doing a great job. But the football coverage hasn't really gotten into my rotation yet.
Well, I appreciate you saying that you're supporting a local small business that is GopherGazette.com. Now, we're just a small Roseville-based company, all right? We're trying to get our roots planted in the ground of the Gopher ecosystem. So one of these days, you will read something I write, and it's going to be glorious. But look, I think we've gone so long together that we finish each other's sentences.
Sandwiches.
By the way, me and my wife, we'll say that, and we'll also say sandwiches. So I'm glad to know I've never had a unique experience at any point in my life. Truly, at no point in my life have I. If that's what you're saying, that's so funny. I didn't even know that. Look at all this time together. We're still learning new things, Luke.
I have nieces. I've seen Frozen. So, let's talk some offense though. Usually we go position by position. This is the one for the hardcores that want to go a little bit deeper and not so much on the surface. And then we'll get into some broader topics. For me, what I'm actually using to guide this, I found a website recently called the2deep.com with the letter two spelled out, T-W-O. And Ryan, I am happy to inform, please go to your instant messaging that we do from time to time. Sure. You can no longer say that you do not get a two deep. You do not get a depth chart, because now there is a vibe coded two deep that is going to be updated on the regular for you, and you can do all your sourcing and all your background. But guess what? I've got this.
So technology's coming to take my job, is what you're telling me. I'm going to already tell you, I clicked on your link and I've already looked at it just briefly. Boy, do we have some differing thoughts and opinions and feelings now.
Yeah.
I will tell people, for those of you who do want to go see a Gopher football practice, we finally found out yesterday officially the 2 days that fans will be able to go see the Gopher football team. Now, I would tell you that they haven't made it exactly easy to do so, but for fear of me showing up and already getting more stern talking to's than I normally do, why don't I just tell everybody the two open practices, Luke? And that was going to be this Friday. You're thinking to yourself, oh, I can get off work, be able to go catch it. Nope. Friday at 10:30 at the practice facility at Athletes Village. So 10:30 Athletes Village. You can come watch a Gopher practice. It'll be one of their first in pads. And then the final one you'll be able to come see is on August 20th, which is a Thursday evening at Huntington Bank Stadium. So for those of you thinking to yourselves, okay, well, that one's pretty doable. I would agree. But you get two of them, that's when they are. And so you'll be able to see and compare and contrast what we talk about here today offensively, which is an offense that sputtered for most of the season. See how much better it looks. But two open practices. Luke, which one are you coming to?
Probably the Thursday night one. I could maybe hit the Friday one if I currently have to figure out the care situation for one of my kids. So if I'm responsible for that one, I'm probably going to be there with him.
I'll tell you, for those of you who might have a job on a Friday morning and can't make it work, the lovely people of Gopher Gazette will be at each one of these practices. Plus, we have our own special media practice. We'll be able to be at three practices, practice report, Fleck quotes, coordinator quotes, photo galleries via the great Dan Owen. So for those of you who want to see that, again, gophergazette.com, to which it is 60% off from right now all the way up until kickoff on Eastern Illinois. I'm just trying to get you in the door, man. Again, I think you're going to find that from what Luke tells you about our Gopher basketball coverage, from what I believe, what we do Gopher football-wise, where I've got sit-downs with Anthony Smith about expectations of being the preseason defensive player of the year in the Big Ten, by the way, that came out at Big Ten Media Days. You've got Drake Lindsey being influenced by a Kevin O'Connell worksheet. I got into that with him. Darius Taylor talks about the Power Rangers, which, nope, you're not thinking of Luke's favorite pink one, my favorite red one. You're thinking about the other players behind him, which we'll get into today. Or even, again, Maverick Baranowski, I went in depth with on one of everybody's most interesting topics, which is the green dot, where it just got into college football a couple years ago. But Mav sat me down and told me, this is what they actually say to me in the headset. And the funniest part is, for those of you who have gamed at any point in your life, you can look at Luke on the YouTube and see that he's got a headset on. And that's where Mav was like, I felt like I was on Xbox and I started talking back to them to only realize I'm not in a Modern Warfare 2 lobby. They can't hear what I'm saying. So other than that, it's been a pretty good adjustment. So a lot of fun stuff there. But yeah, it's always interesting, Luke, when we get to talk about the offense.
All right, let's talk about the offense, and we'll start with the big fellas up front, Ryan. This is a group that is going to be looked at and focused on because of the run game, probably first and foremost. You have some guys coming back. You've got some experience. We talked in previous episodes about Greg Johnson will be back for his senior year. Ashton Beers will be, the first back-to-back center. You've got Nathan Roy coming off of a great freshman season, and probably some expectations now attached to his name. And then you've got Bennett Warren, you know, probably the high profile transfer, not to mention Tony Nelson, who saw some starts in the end of the year. But like, what are you expecting from this group? I just stated what I saw as the two deep starting the starters, but I'm sure you're going to go at least two or three layers deep on me here.
Well, I think the kids would tell you, and I say this as a man who gets into his mid-30s officially here within the next 48, 72 hours. I've learned the term soft launch from watching my wife's YouTube videos about drama-related trash television.
Yeah.
So I want to soft launch this at you to see what you would think, because I've already done it to the lovely and handsome and beautiful people on Gopher Gazette when talking about the offensive line. Is what would you think? And I've spent a lot of time thinking about this just here recently, and I'm going to be very curious to see if it comes to fruition come September. If Minnesota rotates offensive linemen into the Mississippi State game, potentially into the Washington game at the end of September, and let me, before I let you speak on it, this would be the hypothetical, is it would, in my mind, likely be Greg Johnson, who is the preseason All-American, someone that the NFL draft community loves immensely. I was just reading Dane Brugler, who's one of my favorite NFL draft guys. He works for The Athletic. Had Greg Johnson as the number two interior offensive line prospect heading into the fall, which I think is is fascinating. Now, again, I've been banging the Greg Johnson's really good drum, but the thing with Greg Johnson is, can I just see him stick at a position, please, at any point? Because he's now started games, I believe, at every position on the offensive line outside of maybe right guard. But in the scenario that I'm talking about where Minnesota rotates their offensive line, I think he would probably play right tackle, because that is going to be the crux of this unit, is Bennett Warren ready? I don't even think it's necessarily DJ Daniel Ship. It's because he's only a second-year player. And I say constantly on Gopher Gazette that I have no expectations within the way Minnesota runs their program on the offensive and defensive line, which is taking developmental guys, the 4 and 5, you know, the top 100 guys who are 6'7", 320 pounds. Like, those guys aren't coming here, okay? They need 18, 24 months to be able to just build strength, and that's where DJ Ship is not ready. Andrew Trout, Gavin Meyer. But that's where Bennett Warren's now in his third year in college football, is coming from an SEC program that you would, in theory, say has adequate strength and conditioning. But if Bennett Warren's not ready, I do wonder if Greg Johnson plays right tackle, which to me, here's what I would tell you. As I said, I would strongly prefer Greg sticks at guard. Mm-hmm. But the exciting part about it to me is we've talked for I don't know how many hours on this podcast about how the guys at right tackle shouldn't be playing there because they're not athletic. Like, I say this with the utmost peace and love to Quinn Carroll, Dylan Ray, and the other bodies that have played right tackle in recent years. Greg Johnson is more than athletic enough to play right tackle to me. Like, I think he would be the best athlete they've had at right tackle since Daniel Faalele, which, say what you will about him being just a gigantic human being, he's still in the NFL today, which is very hard to do. And if you're not athletic, you can't do that. So this is a very, as I usually say, Dan Barrero-esque question to you of what would you think if they rotated 6, maybe 7 offensive linemen come September?
I think that there would be maybe some understanding because it's something we've seen in the past, but there would be some disappointment in that it seemed like that the plan that seemingly we probably all could get behind, which would be like you went after someone like Bennett Warren and it just didn't work for this season, right out the chute, right? That would be a little bit on the disappointing side. If I'm correct though, Bennett Warren's is he only a sophomore?
He is. See, I can't even use sophomore and freshman and juniors anymore.
We're going to have to call. So in this 5x5 era, are we going to have to call them 1s, 2s, 3s, and 4s?
Yeah,
and fives?
I mean, I just call them by their year now. Bennett Warren is in his third year. He's a third year player.
He's a third year. Okay.
Yep.
So he'd be, yeah, okay. That's good terminology we need to use going forward. I'm glad we set those ground rules. So he's a third year out of five. So yeah, I mean, he's got some tread on the tires, for years to come, but you really, with the investment that you make, you'd be a little bit disappointed that, you know, maybe that wasn't that investment isn't going to pay right away, right? That's the disappointing part.
Yeah, and especially because he's a guy that you spent probably the most money on out of the portal on the offensive side of the ball because you knew you needed someone that could come in and compete. Now, I'm not saying that Greg Johnson put it in ink. And yeah. I don't want to be on an aggregator somewhere that says Ryan Burns says Greg Johnson's going to start at right tackle come Eastern Illinois. I have no idea if that's going to happen. I just expect to see Greg Johnson work there at these open practices to the media and the public that I'm going to be at. And so if that's the case, somebody's asking him, says, okay, well, what does the offensive line look like then? Well, you're going to keep Nathan Roy at left tackle, and his second year is the starter there. You're going to keep Ashton Beers at center, which for the first time in the Greg Harbaugh era, they're going to have a returning center, which I still don't think we talk enough about, going from John Michael Schmitz, who is arguably one of the best centers of all time in this institution, to then Nathan Bowe, Greg Johnson, and Ashton Beers, where Nathan was fine. He's a great kid. It's just going from him, an NFL guy, to what Nathan Bowe gave you. It was fine, but it wasn't outstanding. And then Greg Johnson moves there and he struggles quite a bit, especially mentally, which is why he had so many pre-snap penalties. And then Ashton Beers played through a high ankle sprain for 75% of the season. and also an elbow injury that was so severe last year that it required offseason surgery. Mm-hmm. So if we can just get a healthy center on top of the mm-hmm. returning part of it, you're going to keep those two in the middle. And that, to me, then gives you the three guys competing on the interior, which would be, I hope Greg Johnson stays at left guard, but the right guard position is going to be Tony Nelson, Tracy Minnesota's own, one of the strongest human beings on the team, a track thrower, started the final couple games of the year at right guard. But you've also got a couple of third-year players in Jaden Ball, who is a transfer from Purdue about 18 months ago now. You saw him play a little bit in the bowl game here and there, and also Brett Carroll, who's a third-year in the program, who I think is going to be the starting center next year. But if he can push his way into the conversation too. So much of this, though, Luke, is just to be determined. And but these are the names I would talk about is, like, do I want, and probably the Gopher football staff want, Bennett Warren to go out and win the right tackle battle so they can keep Greg Johnson at left guard? You're gosh darn right they do. But I think the thing that I want to see from Brian Callahan, the Gopher offensive line coach, is this. I spent a lot of time on this bleeping podcast last year lamenting the right side of the offensive line and how they stuck with guys they shouldn't have. And it was the bane of my existence. And I still get agitated talking about it, as you can hear in my voice right now.
Mm-hmm.
So what if, I don't know, hear me out. JK, hear me out. Great idea. Don't want to pitch on it. You just let the guys figure it out in fall camp. And if you want to take the battle on a September, fine. But it's like the polar opposite of what they could potentially do, which is stick with the same guys. Now, again, if Bennett Warren goes out there and wins the job at right tackle, it's, I think, a different scenario than what it was with Dylan Ray last year. Because what was the upside with Dylan Ray? He wasn't coming back for 27. What were you sticking with at that point? Bennett Warren has an additional 2 years of eligibility after this.
Yeah.
Like, you can give him something to build on, where Nathan Roy, you saw it last year, he got better as the year went on, and now you got a building block. So my hope is that, as I said, Bennett Warren proves to the staff that he can win right tackle. But if he can't, it wouldn't shock me one bit to see them rotate guys like they did in the 2019 season, where that is kind of the crux of somebody's, I'm sure, thought in the back of their minds. Well, you can't have a good offense if you're rotating offensive linemen. I will remind you, how do you think John Michael Schmitz got into the mix back when? That was him rotating at center in the 2019 season with Connor Olson, Blaze Andries, the Marshall's own, my favorite actuary. He rotated about 49 different positions on that offensive line. So it can be done, and you can still have a good offense. I would just tell you, from what we saw last year, the Minnesota Moving Company was not good. And now it's fascinating to see, just NFL-wise, you've got Greg Johnson, who projects right now preseason, if you talk to the scouting community, is a top 45 overall selection. You've got Ashton Beers getting love as a day three guy. You've got Nathan Roy returning for his second year after he more than held his own at left tackle. The question is, okay, you've got NFL talent there. Can you actually be a serviceable, hear me out, serviceable Big Ten offensive line? Because I think that should be the bar for this. I mean, I think they've got upside with themselves, but they just got to go out and do it, man. And that's where you heard Harbaugh talk about it with me last Friday. They want this group to be physical, which I hope an offensive coordinator in the Big Ten is saying that, especially one that called plays into that offense for 13 games off this last season. But I am fascinated to see what Brian Callahan ends up doing in September with this unit.
Yeah, one thing that we talked about last season too was we maybe wanted to see them run some more gap scheme stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Because they were struggling in particular with the beloved inside zone, right? And let's flash forward to now. They've brought in a former offensive line coach that is now, what would you call it? Not an assistant, but an advisor or whatever. Yep. Analyst, advisor, or whatever, that knows gap schemes really well.
And who is that guy?
Lime Grover. I don't remember
Matt
his first
Limegrover,
name.
Matt
Lime Grover. Yeah. So, he's on staff.
Not Jerry Kill, Matt Lime Grover. Yes.
Yeah. And I'm not suggesting that they need to go to gaps, right? One thing Harbaugh talked about is how lots of teams largely run maybe just a couple of run plays, right? And they do those out of different formations, you know, obviously with different motions and window dressing there, but then they run that. They run like the same few plays. I am curious to see, you know, if they do take a little bit more tactical change to keep defenses on their toes, in large part because we never saw them be successful consistently with that inside zone last year. And that we did see them take some chances, and will they change their approach? I don't know. You know, they're not running the RPO as much. So you don't need it to be inside zone, but it's really all Callahan is largely coached.
Which is why I know everybody wants to, and again, we've spent time this offseason talking about gap scheme, and I've asked Harbaugh about it and written about it. Like, I do think you'll see them play around with it some more here in fall camp, but it's still even just, I think Harbaugh said it, like they want to also use more duo with their inside zone, which is just a subtle tweak to the blocking scheme of trying to work double teams. Why would that be important? Well, if you can't move mass against mass on the offensive and defensive line, it's tough to get any penetration on inside zone if you're constantly losing ground, if not gaining ground. Mm-hmm. So that's where duo is still zone blocking, but you're just working double teams up. You're getting more men working, trying to get up to the second level. So I think it's just such a huge year overall for the offense, and we've talked about it with Harbaugh going into the year on an expiring contract, regardless of his success or failure. Like, it's going to, I mean, he has to succeed if he's going to be coaching here in 5 months. I mean, that's just the reality of the situation. But for him, so much of this just comes down to, is Greg Johnson the best guard that we've seen in my 16 years covering the team? Is Nathan Roy taking the next step with his physicality in year two as the starter? Can Ashton Beers stay healthy and prove that he's a day three selection? And can the right side of the offensive line not have 5 to 7 plays a game that just completely destroy drives, where it's a clear MA, aka missed assignment, and the running back just gets hit immediately, or Drake Lindsey is sacked and it's 2nd and 14 instead of 2nd and 7. I mean, that is among the biggest things this offense has to do, is just stay on track, which would, if you go back and watch 2025 Gopher offensive football without Darius Taylor, it was like watching paint dry at times, because they could just rarely put together 8 plays, that there just wasn't a critical error. When then it's 2nd and 12, and then the play sheet for Harbaugh gets just so much smaller. But for the guys up front, Luke, I mean, this Minnesota Moving Company, the excuses can't really be there in my mind because of the talent that they have. Now they actually have to go prove it, but the bar for them has certainly been raised this offseason.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the tight end group. As we know, having watched a Harbaugh-led offense, they are going to run number of tight ends. You're definitely going to see 11 personnel. You'll probably see some 12 and 13 personnel as well. And you know, this is the count of the number of tight ends that are on the field. Do the definitions help, do you think?
I mean, I think explaining is a good thing for largely many things in life.
But this is a group that they lost a fair amount from, right? So I'm very curious, you know, names that you're going to recognize from last year, like Pierce Walsh, and if you paid attention to the bowl game, Julian Johnson, they're back. Mm-hmm. But then you've got, you know, guys like freshman Roman Voss and the transfer Caden Helms from Oklahoma. Like, so Ryan, help me set an expectation of what I can expect even from tight end this year.
I'm going to say this with the utmost peace and love to the tight end position. As a former collegiate tight end myself, it is the least important position on the offense. Mm-hmm. Like, we can hem and haw about it, but to me, the success and failure doesn't not largely come down to the tight ends. Now, we're going to spend a lot of time talking about the tight ends, I believe, in 2027, 2028, and 2029, when we're talking about Roman Voss and Brooks Bacco and Drake Mickelson, Jacob Simpson down the line. Gabe Weaver, again, I can continue to go on there. But I think this year specifically, I don't know that you're going to see a ton of 12 and 13 personnel. Why?
Okay.
Well, it's because Jameson Gears is now gone. Mr. I only catch the most difficult t- touchdowns you've ever seen in your entire life.
Yeah.
And just come up in these huge spots. Then you're also without Drew Bibber. You're also without Frank Y Blast Bierman, Mr. Fullback for them. So that means you're replacing 94% of the tight end receptions from last year. And that's 80% of the tight end snaps overall. So it's just a very inexperienced group. And that's where the tight end coach Eric Kaler has got his hands full. Because I don't think you're going to be able to pencil in anybody outside of Pierce Walsh. And even the role that he'll have, I think, is kind of up in the air because he missed time here in the spring and he's going to miss time to start fall camp with. I mean, I saw him walking out of the building when I went in late July and he had a large splint on one of his wrists. I forget which one it was. So I'm going to imagine he's not ready to go for fall camp in terms of full contact yet. But it's just trying to figure out, how do you replace roles? Now, I don't really care what the names are per se, but there's just roles where it's like you need somebody to be an H, which is the Frank Bierman type, where you can come down and meet somebody in the hole. Now, I don't know if that guy is on the roster. If it is, I'm going to be looking at someone like Pierce Walsh. If you're trying to think to yourself, okay, well, who's the next really good blocking tight end in the vein of Co-Keefe or Nick Kallerup? I think that guy could be Julian Johnson, who now in his third year in the program. I am infatuated with the skill set physically because he's a guy that Iowa wanted back in the day in recruiting on the defensive side, which is interesting. Minnesota said tight end. They've stuck to it now in the third year in the program. I mean, he is a tall drink of water at 6'6", probably around 250, 260, very good length. And he's a guy I can see that if he gets on top of you and gets his hands on you, he can probably move you. But you have to remember, he hasn't played a lot of snaps. All right, Ryan, who can catch a pass? Well, okay, how about somebody like, let's say, Jacob Simpson, who I think there's some expectations for internally. We'll see how the Oklahoma transfer, Caden Helms, fits into the mix. He's battled injuries throughout his career. I think he can be a little do a little bit of everything type of guy. But the one that everybody wants to talk about, and I get it, is Southern Minnesota's own Roman Voss and what could it potentially look like. Now, I'm going to be Buzz Killington, Luke, when I tell you, I think a very good outcome for Roman Voss this fall, I'm just talking as a true freshman who arrived here in June, a 90th percentile outcome for Roman Voss in my mind is if he finds a way to play 10 to 15 snaps per game. How much cold water can I continue to throw on this? Because it feels like people want him to walk into 40 snaps. I don't know that I see that, and I can get into why. But do you feel like what I just said there, 10 to 15 snaps a game, is too bearish? Or what do you think?
Honestly, if that was like your positive outcome, I thought you were going to say like he might play some special teams like that. So to me, that's even better. But the idea that he comes in and, you know, has 35-ish snaps a game, that feels, especially at a position like tight end, a little bit unrealistic. I hope he sees the field most and then that it grows as the season goes on.
So why I say it is, it's so tough for these guys to come in June and play. Mm-hmm. And it's not a knock against his decision to go play basketball and be a kid, which I think is harder and harder for kids to do nowadays. It's just the reality of he's got to now drink through the fire hose at full blast compared to some of these other guys who got here in January where the volume is a little bit toned down. Now, it's not rocket science to play tight end. But you have to remember, Voss hasn't really played a lot of tight end. He was the quarterback for Jackson County Central, played defense when they needed him. He's played some in his life. And like I said, you don't need to be this great football mind to be able to pick up on the tight end position. It's just so new to him. So I understand that there's roles to be had. Like we said, 84% of snaps or 80% of snaps from last year from this room are gone. And Lord knows they could use a pass catching tight end. Or again, we will see if maybe he's going to be somebody that they potentially trust. And I say potentially because we have seen PJ Fleck have some trust issues with true freshmen, especially if you were to put him as, say, a Wildcat quarterback with Darius Taylor.
Yeah.
Now, again, I think that is very much to be determined throughout the next 4 or 5 weeks. But I just would say, I think Roman Voss has a very bright future as he continues to learn the tight end position. But I would just say, I want to temper expectations for him this fall. And then starting in 27, then yeah, we can really talk about him playing 40 snaps a game or whatever it may be. I just think for the Eric Kaler's room this fall, you're going to see a lot of different guys with a lot of different roles. I mean, I think there is a realistic chance that you could see those five guys, Pierce Walsh, Jacob Simpson, Caden Helms, Julian Johnson, and Roman Voss, all have different type of sub-package roles. But I'm sure they would want to narrow it down to a few. It's just to tell you, this thing is wide open here in early August. Mm-hmm.
All right. This is probably a good time to remind people to mark their calendars, because the 24th of August is coming. I didn't want to give you too much of a hard time that you didn't plug this while you were so focused on your interviews with our beloved coordinators who are on expiring contracts. And that was probably the only thing on the forefront of your mind. But on the 24th of August, you and I are going to be down at Launchpad Golf. This is down in Prior Lake. So make sure that people reserve that. We're going to do our annual draft with Daniel House, our Big Ten Honors draft. So get down there. We'll probably record somewhere between 6:30 and 7. And then we'll also make sure that that will be around early to hang around for like a happy hour chat. I'm sure Ryan Burns and Gopher Gazette are going to be handing out free memberships. I heard.
Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, I heard that's what you're doing. Yeah.
Monday the 24th, Launchpad Golf, which is Mystic Lake-ish. Okay.
Yeah. Just to get Prior Lake area.
Yeah. And come hang out. I mean, if you're listening to this and have been a long time and you've always wanted to say hi to us and tell me how I have a face for radio, tell Luke how he's got a face for TV. Come talk to Daniel House. Talk to him about all things analytics. Get to meet House.
Yeah.
Come hang out with us. Again, it's free to come. We're just going to be hanging out down at Launchpad Golf Monday the 24th. Come say hi. And just for Luke's honor, I've got some old Gopher Illustrated merch.
Oh, yeah.
I have let's use for now. I'm probably just going to bring it and be like, hey, if you're an XL and you want this, here you all go. Yours. Thanks for coming. So what do you think about that?
I think lovely, and I hope you sign it, honestly.
Do you know how much anxiety that would give me? Because I cannot stress to you how unimportant I am in my own mind point where, like, here's what I'll tell you, and I probably shouldn't tell you this, or probably shouldn't tell the listeners. I can care.
Yeah.
Like, I hate listening to myself talk so much that I don't know, in probably the thousands of podcast episodes that I've ever done, that I've ever listened back to one for more than 2 minutes. Because I hate, and I cannot stress to you, hate hearing the sound of my own voice. Because it doesn't match when you listen back to it, what you hear in your own head. And then, again, you're going to critique yourself. And I know that I have to improve in areas, but like, I hate listening to myself.
I can't wait until someone comes up with their phone and just starts playing one of the episodes.
I cannot.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, but it should be fun. It should be a fun time. So come down. And you know, if you're superstitious, you show up because we had such a good showing in 2019. You are willing a ceiling season. All right.
Here it is.
All right. Let's chat a little bit about the receiver position, Ryan. This is one that I think many people are going to be interested in. You heard some of the comments from Drake Lindsay. This might have been in one of the pieces that you wrote, or maybe you tweeted, but this is, I think he said something to the extent of maybe the deepest wide receiver room he's seen since he's been on campus. Obviously, we know the names Jalen Smith and Javon Tracy. After that, I think there's a lot that we get to learn. If you're a Dinkytown Athletes member, you got to meet Zion Steptoe, and he has quite the personality, which we all learned. Let's see if he can make that happen on the field as well. But man, this is a position group I'm fascinated with to see what happens.
The glass half full of receiver this year is what Drake Lindsay and PJ Fleck have talked about, which is they believe they're deeper than they have been in more recent years.
Mm-hmm.
Because you return Jalen Smith, Great Bowl MVP. You return Javon Tracy, who set transfer records for the University of Minnesota in terms of, I believe it was receptions, receiving yards, and receiving touchdowns. So his year one impact was there. You're hoping that the former All-MAC receiver can take a leap in year two, like someone, say, Elijah Spencer did. And then there's hopes and dreams for guys like true freshmen like Hayden Moore, Quade Hendricks. I'll get into them a little bit later. Or Noah Jennings, who I'll continue to bang the drum as loudly as I possibly can, that I think he's got better odds to lead them in receiving yards than I think what people think. Plus, you've got, yeah, like you said, Zion Steptoe. Or again, we'll see if Perry Thompson comes into the equation at any point here. So that is the glass half full of them. The glass half empty is you change position coaches because the receiving core to me had just gotten so stagnant, whether it was unwillingness at times in run blocking. I know we talked about it constantly last year where 50-50 balls were not 50-50. And I've got the Pro Football Focus contested catch stat up right now where Minnesota receivers last year had a contested catch win rate of 41%. That is the worst that they've had as a receiving core since 2017, Fleck's first year. And the tough part about that, too, is the two guys who returned from last year who actually played snaps are Javon Tracy, who was 31% contested catch rate. So it was 30-70 for 50-50 balls. And Jalen Smith was 35%. So you lose Malachi Coleman to Wisconsin. You lose Kenrick Lanier to Mizzou. Lameke Brockington dips on you after the Wisconsin game. And Logan Loya, I hardly knew ye. So you change position coaches to now Mr. Blue Collar himself, that is Isaac Frickte from Caledonia, has grinded his way up from D2 to the Missouri Valley, now to the Big Ten. You've got new names. I just, with this group, Luke, I think it's going to get better as the year goes on. And I'm interested to see what year two jumps look like for Jalen Smith, who played through a knee injury from the Nebraska game on, where you will remember him catching that ball on the opposing sideline and then getting caught. And it looked like he was running in mud. Yeah. Suffered an injury, played through it the rest of the year. Our Javon Tracy has the big blow up game against Northwestern, but struggled to find consistency at points. It's just how quickly can, I think the guy I have the most expectations for transfer wise is Noah Jennings, because you listen to the staff, you watch it with your own two eyes. I know a lot of people like to look at the spring game and formulate every single opinion from a day in which they didn't take a single snap under center. They ran two things, no pre-snap motion, two defensive coverages, yada, yada. But again, the connection with Drake Lindsey is there on a deep ball. And they continue to talk about with Noah Jennings. He's got speed like we haven't had. Okay. Well, I like Noah Jennings. I also know that at Cincinnati, it didn't click for him in year one. Now, we've seen it click for guys in year two, a la Elijah Spencer at the Power Four level, and I hope that's the case, which I would also say, Luke, did you know Elijah Spencer has been around all spring and into the summer as like a volunteer wide receiver coach?
No, didn't know that at all.
So I'd go to like a Gopher camp, or I'd go to a Gopher practice, and there's Elijah Spencer trying to, trying to make his dues and pay his dues. And maybe he's going to be getting into the coaching game another time soon. So I would also say it's been interesting to hear behind the scenes, or I wrote about it back in the spring, like Hayden Moore, if you're asking me right now, what true freshman from the 2026 class plays the most snaps this fall, it's either going to be Zeke Bates, who we'll talk about in a minute at running back, or it's going to be Hayden Moore to me. Now, the thing for Hayden Moore is, how quickly can the game continue to slow down for him? He gets here in January, works his way up to the first and second team by the end of spring, and is making plays. And that's, to me, Luke, that's the crux of this position, is I don't care who the name is. I just want them to make plays. Or even the guy who's been getting a lot of steam behind the scenes here since he arrived in June is Quade Hendricks, where Fleck was talking about him again down in Chicago is a guy that they're probably going to see how much can he handle here in the month of August to see if maybe he's the fifth or sixth receiver. But I just want someone you can point to by the bye week, say, that you know you can count on week in and week out, because that wasn't Jalen Smith last year. That wasn't Javon Tracy last year. And now you've got a myriad of different transfers and different true freshmen that are trying to find roles. And I would just say, like, the job that Isaac Frickte has to undertake because of what was left to him, both, I think, almost culture-wise in that room, which it's been interesting to hear Drake Lindsey and some of the other guys talk about, kind of the culture that was last year compared to what it is this year. And just, it needed to be overhauled. And so I'm glad that, to me, Fleck did that. Changing the coaches is a lot of new names. It's just, they need to make plays, Luke. And I don't know who's going to be making plays consistently for these huge games early on the schedule, like Mississippi State, Washington, and Michigan.
Yeah, you really hope that someone like Jalen Smith can take that jump, right? There was so much promise. You banged the drum for him. Like you mentioned, Hayden Moore doesn't lack any confidence. So you hope maybe he bursts onto the scene. But yeah, to your point, you don't have any evidence yet that it's going to happen. Noah Jennings is one, just based on this conversation and in other podcasts we've done that I'll pay attention to, but I don't have the lofty expectations for this room until you see it on the field. Right.
Right. And that's the thing is, like, I know I tend to be more negative than positive at this type. And I know just because I want to see it with my own two eyes, like, by the time we talk in 3 weeks, maybe I'm trying to sell you on, like I said, more Noah Jennings, or that Jalen Smith has made the jump, or Javon Tracy's made a jump. It's just, I think you have to put it all in relative perspective of, this is a room that is very much in transition because of new bodies, whether, like we talked about with the transfers of Jennings and Steptoe and Perry Thompson, the true freshman who just got on campus, like Hayden Moore, Quade Hendricks, maybe Braden Stevens, the speedster out of Kansas City, can earn a role too. Like, they're just, like we've talked about with so many other spots, you have so many different roles open that eventually someone's going to just reach out and grab it. And so we'll find out over the next couple of weeks. I mean, if you're asking me today who's starting against Eastern Illinois, it's Noah Jennings, Jalen Smith, and Javon Tracy. And then you're mixing in Hayden Moore, Zion Steptoe, Quade Hendricks would be my guess for the next three right now, but very much to be determined.
All right, I'm going to write that in ink, that's for sure.
Yeah, many people are.
Let's talk running back. Darius Taylor returns for his fourth season here with the Gophers. We know him to be an incredibly versatile back, not only as a runner, but also as a receiver. Mm-hmm. You know, he is zeroing in on the all-time reception record here at the University of Minnesota for a running back. We would assume that he should be able to eclipse that in, if they are able to use him as they expect and he stays healthy. I would like to note, Ryan, as we talk about this season, it is the year 2026, correct?
Many people are saying this to me.
It is divisible by two, correct?
Oh, this is going to be very important. Look at you. You know what you're doing, Luke. You're taking a little bit of a stroll down one of my favorite streets, which is what, Luke?
It's Narrative Street. So the Gophers on odd years have had a real struggle with the running back position injuries on odd seasons, and in even seasons, they stay healthy. How do we know this? Well, let's go back to last season. Darius Taylor pulled up lame on an easy touchdown run, and then was on and off all season. AJ Turner gone very early in the season with a torn ligament. I'm trying to even remember the rest of them. Those are the two that are coming to top of mind, but those are your top two running backs going into the season. Yep. Now this season, both you would hope would be healthy. You'd hope that AJ Turner would come back to the expected form that we expected for him this last year and were so unfortunately robbed of. And then from there, Ryan, where do we go? We've got a number of different contributors. Grant Washington's a name that we saw last year. You've got a portal guy in TJ Thomas. I know that there are recruits that you really like, but what's this room going to look like behind Darius Taylor?
Well, I think we first have to start with, I'm proud of you for taking a little bit of a stroll down Narrative Street for me in my honor.
You're welcome.
Considering we did an entire podcast about the biggest storylines and questions, which is essentially just a Narrative Street episode, and I forgot to mention it, which I sent you a text afterwards. I was beside myself, just absolutely resigned is a pretty good way to put it. Now, here's what I would tell you with Darius is how many games in Darius Taylor's 3-year career has he received 10 or more carries in?
Let's see. So 3 years, what he's played.
So there's been 39 total games in those 3 years. How many games has he gotten 10 or more carries in, which is me saying he was pretty healthy for most of those games?
24.
You hit it. How did you possibly do that?
You know, even a blind squirrel finds a nut every once in a while.
Jiminy crickets, look at you. I am absolutely flabbergasted, but you are right. And why I bring that up is, what do you think Minnesota's record is in the 24 games that Darius Taylor has essentially been healthy enough to be a consistent contributor on offense?
It's going to be pretty good. So if it's 24, so I'll go like 16 and 8.
I am absolutely appalled right now that you continue to get these correct. They are 16 and 8 in games in which Darius Taylor has gotten 10 or more carries. Now, if you've been living under a rock or not consuming Gopher football content here over the last 8 months, the Cliff Notes version of what Darius Taylor is trying to change his health, because we've said it forever on here, the most important ability in football is availability. And so what is Darius Taylor trying now in year 4 to find himself on the field more often? Now, it's two things. One, he hired a personal chef, which my man makes 6 figures easy. He can afford to do that. He's eating very clean, talking to me about DEXA scans, I think is what they are, body fat scans. But the other one that I never thought that I'd be talking to with a 20-something-year-old kid is he's talking to me about building strength in his pelvic floor, which for those of you listening to this, you're thinking to yourself, come again? And I would be here to tell you, my man's out here doing Pilates a couple times a week, trying to activate and strengthen areas of his body that he maybe has neglected over the last couple of years in an effort to stay healthy. And here's what I would tell you. I appreciate his willingness to, number one, be vulnerable enough to tell a bunch of media jackals in a room that probably don't know a ton about pelvic floors, all about what he's attempting to do, but he's also trying something different, because we've said the old Albert Einstein quote attributed to, which is definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. So he's trying different things, which look for any of us in life is very important. So he's trying to strengthen different areas. He's spending more time than he ever has. If you talk to people behind the scenes in Dinky Town, in the training room, trying to make sure. But it's also us saying the running back position in football, just in general, is one he is taking 20-something hits a game. And I will tell you, as a guy who played in the early 2010s, the level of athlete that is now on the field compared to 15 years ago is not even close. Like, they're bigger, stronger, faster, hitting more violent than they ever have. So he plays a position where the hits add up. And in his career, he's got nearly 500 carries. Guess what, Luke? He's averaging 5.1 yards per carry on those. That's pretty damn good. So it's how long can you keep Darius Taylor healthy for? And the astute Dan Owen also looked into that. I believe he is on track to pass Little Canada legend Chuck Rios for running back receptions if he just gets 35-40 receptions, somewhere around there. Which, if you've watched Darius Taylor in a Greg Harbaugh offense over the last 3 seasons, I can about put in stone that he's going to catch 4 passes on a given week. Now, the interesting part, which leads into the other people in the room, which Mo Ibrahim has effectively called Power Rangers, and there are Power Rangers in terms of decals on the wall now within the Gopher running back room, is I almost wonder if you're going to see, because of the question marks at receiver, maybe you see more 2-back sets where Darius Taylor is flexed in the slot, where if you can get him on a linebacker say, or a nickel that you feel like he can win on second and third and short, you know, win on a slant or whatever on whatever the route may be. Maybe you see that a little bit more. But it's also to say the guys behind him, and I wrote about this at Big Ten Media Days, is that's probably my biggest question, because it's not, you know, if, but when Darius Taylor will miss time. That's just the reality of the situation of running back in college football. So I said, hey, you know them better than I do. Let's sit down and go through these guys. Now, I would tell you the two I'm most bullish on right now are one, TJ Thomas, who is a transfer from Elon, more of a scat back, I like to kind of describe him as, where it's not because he's 5'8", which we've seen 5'8 backs, a.k.a. the Mount Rushmore of Gopher running backs, who's now coaching the room, and Mo succeed at that. It's just that TJ Thomas is like 185, 190, where Mo was 215. Mm-hmm. And they win in different ways, where TJ Thomas is more of a guy you want outside zone. You want him catching passes out of the backfield, such as screens, swing passes, different things of that nature. And that's where I think there's a lot of optimism that he can be that third down kind of a back. And then you mentioned AJ Turner, where he goes out to Cal Berkeley, and I believe he tore his ACL, and I think it was his MCL. And he had surgery around that October 1st mark. I've heard that when you go to a practice here in August, you're going to see AJ Turner at full speed, which I don't know how these kids get back sooner and sooner, considering right. The timeline seemed to shorten every year, other than these are freak athletes that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And I know that the medical technology gets better every year, and so do the PT and different things of that nature. But I will continue to say, with someone like AJ Turner, it didn't go well for him before he went down, and was one of the most explosive backs in college football at the Group of Five level at Marshall, transfers to Minnesota, and the game was just fast for him. Guess what? We see that constantly from Group of Five to the Big Ten, because the game just played at a different speed. Now, as the season goes on, I think you'll see AJ Turner regain more of his explosiveness, and I think he'll be a better player after the bye week than he will be against Eastern Illinois, just because he's going to gain more acceleration, suddenness, yada, yada mm-hmm. back. Mm-hmm. That's where I would almost hope that he can be almost that spark to the running game in October, November, with fresh legs, that maybe by the time Darius has 120 touches on him by the bye week, that you can kind of turn to a little bit more. And then I also said, the guy with Hayden Moore that I have the most expectation for right now too is Zeke Bates, where I'm not dismissing Ryan Estrada, and I can get into him too, but the Zeke Bates talk behind the scenes for me is pretty tough to ignore, where, I mean, I even saw that like Gopher Football released some pictures, and I mean, if we're going to be social media sleuthing, boy, it's a very slippery mm-hmm. slope. I understand. But you're able to see like the huddle with Drake Lindsey and Greg Johnson. And who's the tailback there? Zeke Bates, the true freshman who arrived in January from Pennsylvania, who to me is more of a north-south kind of a guy. It was interesting to hear Darius talk about him. And he reminds me a lot of me, where he's like, he's very physical, north-south, but he can make you miss too. So because he got the 6-month head start on Ryan Estrada, who is going to have every opportunity, and if there was ever a position on offense where it's pretty dang simple, Luke, in terms of like aiming points and just take the ball and be a playmaker, mm-hmm. I mean, running back is another one where it's like not rocket science outside of maybe some protection calls. Mm-hmm. But you've got a lot of guys, and like you said, Grant Washington ran for 100 yards last year. You've got Nico Castillo, who's another true freshman. You've got Xavier Ford, who continues to get some things behind the scenes. But I think the important part about this is trying to narrow it down. And if you're asking me who the four guys are as we sit here in early August, who I have the most confident in seeing, it would be TJ Thomas. It would be Zeke Bates. We'll see how healthy AJ Turner is. We'll see how much Ryan Estrada can handle only being on campus for 2 months. And then Xavier Ford, too. So mm-hmm. it's a lot by committee here as we sit here currently in time, but I'm sure Mo is sitting there thinking, like, we need to narrow this down. But that's the beauty of these practices, is by the time we get into our season preview, I hope to be able to tell you behind the scenes, hey, they've narrowed it down to XYZ guy.
I'd like to think it's going to be by committee, but history has proven to me that it's going to be ride the workhorse. So I would not be surprised if a healthy Darius Taylor gets the lion's share of those carries. But man, I would like it to be the by committee a little bit more.
Well, that's where Darius again did stay healthy in 24. Like he was a little banged up towards the end there in November, but he still had like, I think it was a 13 or 14 game run there where he received double digit carries in a row. Like I would hope, like we talked about, now that it's an even season, the angry running back deity of your choice won't smite this room. But if they do, the hope would be between those four names that you've got some guys to where if Darius goes down, it's not like you're going from, if we're going to say tiers, the S tier down to the B or C tier. You're hoping that you can elevate guys throughout the offseason, which is what Mo's been preaching, that if Darius goes down, the drop-off isn't significant like it was at times last year.
All right, let's close out with the quarterback position. I think we all are aware that third-year quarterback Drake Lindsey will be your starter. And then I think we're all clear based on the spring game that true freshman Owen Lansu will be the backup. That was just so apparently obvious in his stunning performance in the spring game.
Is that what website there says, Luke?
No, it doesn't. He's actually...
For those of you who couldn't see Luke's face, he had this just little smirk on his face the entire time trying to wind me
just
up.
Just trying to troll you there, Ryan, just a tiny bit. No, I would not besmirch Max Shikanjansky. You know, Gopher legend, or son of Gopher legend. There, he played a tiny bit last year, and I would imagine he will continue to be backup number one. But I know they brought in a transfer who I don't know much about. I think was he from Liberty? If memory serves.
Look at you, Michael Merdinger. Okay.
Good. I'm genuinely curious, you know, what we can expect after Drake Lindsey. But, you know, Lindsey was able to stay healthy last year. He had a good freshman campaign, you know, and you see the social media speculation. People think that if he can have a breakout year, he could be a first round draft pick. I, for one, would love that because that means that the Gophers had an awesome season. Do I believe that's going to happen? In terms of he's going to be a first round pick? Not really. And that's not because I don't think he's a talented quarterback. I would just be surprised that he has that kind of astronomic rise.
Before I kick off the Drake Lindsey discussion, I do want to say that I do believe Max Shikanjansky is in a tier by himself behind Lindsey.
Okay.
In terms of trust with Greg Harbaugh, in terms of his performance behind the scenes, I think after Schick, it drops off more. If you're looking for hashtag takes, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to attach my horse more to Brady Palmer than I am Owen Lansu right
okay.
now. Brady Palmer had one of the most horrific spring game performances you'll ever see.
Yeah.
Where he didn't complete a pass except three to the other team in the spring game.
I remember.
Which I'm sure for him was the worst athletic event of his entire life. And while Owen Lansu on the other side just did what he did all spring, which was just complete deep passes. Here's what I'll tell you. I like both. And I think there's optimism around both since they've been here in January that they could be the long-term answer. Now, that always hasn't been that way, which is why you've seen some other guys wash out and transfer to other institutions. And I'm going to be very curious to see how they do as the scout team guys in terms of just growing within the offense, whatever it may be. Now, after them, Dylan Wickey missed the entire spring, recovering from shoulders. I don't really see it happening there. Same thing with Merdinger. So, now, things can change, but I would just tell you there's optimism behind the scenes with both Brady Palmer and Owen Lansu. So that's a good thing. Now, I will ask you when we start the Drake Lindsey discussion here, what did you think of Harbaugh's answer to the question that every listener asks every time, which is when I pose the question, Harbaugh, of what is the next step for Drake Lindsey?
I'm trying to remember what his answer was, because that
was a lot of coach speak is what it
yeah,
was.
Like that wasn't the more interesting thing to me, because the more interesting thing to me, I thought that the conversation about the quizzes was good. And then more of the philosophical, like we want to have a physical identity as an offense, right? And especially as the offensive line. So remind me what he said, because it was not memorable.
Wow. Jeez, Luke, it was not memorable.
Well, I'm just like, I don't have it.
What a great plug to go back and just listen to the.
It was a good episode. And if you watch on YouTube, they're split up, right? Offensive and defensive coordinator. Yeah. But on the podcast feed, it's both, and both are good. And Danny Collins and the analogy of being a parent, I thought was very interesting. Being a first year coordinator and also being a first year parent versus being a second year parent. If you're a parent, that resonated with me. You know, that definitely resonated for sure.
I'm sure Dan really appreciates that you watched our YouTube short that we put up about that specific answer, which I won't give away so people can just go listen. But I think for Drake, from asking him, from asking Harbaugh, and from asking that question constantly to people behind the scenes in Dinkytown, because statistically, it's hard to be. What I mean by here's what I'll say. Statistically, I mean, I'm going to take a 3-1 touchdown to interception ratio every day of the week and twice on Saturdays from a Big Ten quarterback.
Yeah.
That's so difficult to do. Now, do I hope that instead of 18-6, it's 24-8 or 27-9? You're darn tootin'. I do.
Yeah.
But I don't know what to expect, especially statistically with touchdowns and all that, because I also think Darius is going to be healthy, which means he's going to vulture you, especially in the red zone. But I'm hoping that Drake can improve on his yards per attempt. Now, what is yards per attempt? It's how far he's throwing it beyond the line of scrimmage. Or just at the end of the day, if you look up and he's 15-22 for 150 yards, well, there's a lot of things that are very close to the line of scrimmage. That's largely what it would probably tell me. Now, a product of that over the last couple of years is Minnesota's receivers have struggled to get open, struggled to catch 50-50 balls, which are usually deeper in nature. And because of that, I think it was what it was. Now, how this whole thing just goes hand in hand, though, is if you do have a run game, which is something that Greg Harbaugh has struggled to cultivate in 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've talked about how the offensive line is probably the most gifted he's had in 4 years. You've got your NFL tailback and Darius Taylor. The reasons why they shouldn't run the ball are very limited to me if Darius is healthy.
Yeah.
So if you have a run game, well, guess what? That puts a stress on the second and third levels of the defense that you haven't had in the last 3 years, where the linebackers actually suck up, the safeties and the corners have their eyes potentially in the wrong place, so they're sucking up. And then those play action shots, you're actually going to be in a better spot to have your receivers make plays. Mm-hmm. But they've also got to go make them. And that's where, for Drake, to me, he spent a lot of time talking with me this offseason about just trying to learn the offense, to where he and Harbaugh are trying to get on the same page of what does Drake do really well? Not what does the offense necessarily do really well. You want those to be tied in together. But ultimately, and this is one of the things I talked to Drake and Greg about, is ultimately the offense revolves around what the quarterback is comfortable with. Because if he's not comfortable with something, he's going to be playing slow. And when you play slow at quarterback and you're a half second late here, a second late there, that's where the windows really shrink. And that's where the turnovers or the sacks, whatever they may be, start to pile up. So you want it to be mirrored, where what Drake does well is what the offense does well. And that's one of the things I think you're going to find this season is, Drake feels like he understands more of what defenses are going to do to try and combat them, so he can make better decisions at the line of scrimmage to get them into the correct run fits. Between he and Ashton Beers returning for their second years there, trying to get that under control, or just even know on some of these timing routes, like who's going to be here, who's going to be there. So that's where with Drake, like I see the first round aspirations or the mock drafts. And I think, and I mean, we've asked Fleck and Harbaugh and Lindsay about it. I think my personal opinion is we're all a year too soon there. I want to see him kind of put it together here. But I think for him, Drake's – I asked Drake actually when we were in Chicago, like, what is the number one thing you look at when you get the stats after a game? And where do you think his eyes went immediately?
God, that's a good question.
Yeah.
I would have assumed
– I try to ask good questions from time to time, Luke.
No, but, like, I would assume completions, like, attempts to completions, but because that's going to lead you to some level of efficiency, right? But I'm curious to now know your answer.
He immediately spouted off completion percentage.
Okay, yeah.
And he's like, you have to – he goes, to clarify, you have to take out my throwaways. Now, it's still an incomplete pass, but it's not one that I've missed.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
You can say, like, I missed somebody in the progression, but it's not a throw that I attempted to make that wasn't completed. And yeah, he talked about how that's kind of one of the ones he settles on just because they want him to be somewhere north of 65%. So if you look at Drake Lindsey last year, he completed 63% of his passes. I think he and Harbaugh want him much – they want him to improve by a couple of completion percentages there. Now, I just want to see them push it down the field a little bit more. But that's where I'll just continue to come back to. That's not about Drake to me. I know Drake wants to do it. It's just he's not going to do it if it's not there. And yeah, we can talk about, well, you got to risk it to get the biscuit. Is that still a saying, by the way?
It's not one I'm familiar with, but, you know, we run in different circles.
So. Yes, we certainly do. You're with the popular kids. I'm with the nerds. It's all fine.
But yeah, right.
If you can get a run game, like I said, to where you're consistently in second and six, third and two, and that's, again, I forgot to mention it when we were talking running backs. That's the other thing that Mo has talked about is on the wall in the running back room, I think is the perfect Mo memory for me, which is 4 + 4 + 4 doesn't equal 12 people. It does, but it equals a first down.
Right.
And that's what Mo was so great at during his time in the Maroon and Gold was he kept Kirk Shiraka offenses on schedule, which allowed them to then be explosive. And that's where if the run game can keep them on schedule, that's where I think you can see Drake in these pass catchers be able to put themselves in more advantageous situations to where, like I said, whether it's play action, run action, whatever it may be, it's going to hit a little bit different if you actually have to honor the run game. If this is the fourth consecutive year where defenses just do not respect the run game and it's 6-on-6 in the box and Minnesota can't run, I mean, Greg Harbaugh is just not going to be here in December. That's just what it's going to be. But if they do have to respect it, that's where I think everyone listening to this would say, we're an hour in, Ryan, and you haven't said it yet. They need to become more explosive. I agree. And they've tried to upgrade in the speed game. They've tried to get better athletes. But ultimately, this game is about trying to create leverage. And that's not just like low man wins at the line of scrimmage. That's true. That's not what I'm talking about with leverage. It's trying to stress defenses as much as you possibly can do when we are now in an era in football where these defenses schematically are some of the most creative and multifaceted that you're ever going to see. I mean, it is truly not an era we've seen before. I mean, the defensive minds throughout this game now, I think, are as good as they've ever been. But that's where you need to see the renaissance on the other side of, well, if you can stress the defense or find some places where they're not sound and attack them, that's where the explosives come. Because you look at last year, I mean, Luke, we can get into the nuances of this, but do you know how many 20-yard plays the Gophers had? And here's what I'll ask you. Where did they rank in 20-plus yard scrimmage plays in the Big Ten last year?
Oh, I would say probably, so there's 18 teams. I'm going to go with 16.
They were 17th, just ahead of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Like they struggled to get deep or just to create explosives. They had 34 in 13 games. And that's where if you can just add, say, 20 to that, okay, be at 54, that will put you 7th, 8th, 9th in the Big Ten. But if that's going to happen, and then Drake Lindsey is going to take the proverbial next step, other than he's now the Slim Reaper, is what he is. Your guy, Jaden McDaniels.
Yeah.
Drake Lindsey, I talked about it with him in Chicago. He's now down to 228 pounds. And I asked him why that, like why that weight? He goes, it's not necessarily about the weight. He goes, it's about the body fat percentage.
Sure.
And that's where he was around 20% when he came into the University of Minnesota in terms of body fat. And he's taller than me. I mean, he is legitimately 6'5", maybe 6'6". Mm-hmm. And now he's down to somewhere around 16.5 body percentage wise. Like he has dropped weight, but he's also dropped a lot of bad weight, which is what he's been focused on, trying to improve himself in the pocket. I'm not going to tell you he's going to be the reincarnation of, let's say, Chris Streveler. Let's say your guy. Here's a blast in the past. Remember when you wanted them to start Vic Viramontes?
I actually don't, but I was a Streveler guy for sure.
Winnipeg Blue Bombers legend.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who I can only imagine how much alcohol he's consumed in his life with ski goggles on now. He's lived a heck of a life in the CFL and being a cult
and
legend
the NFL,
with the New
man.
York Football Jets. So yeah. it's a heck of a life. Now, I'm just telling you, like he's done his part. He's put in the time behind the scenes, or even like he's talked to me about how he didn't feel like he was a great leader necessarily last year because he was questioning himself a lot with things like, you know, because he's a freshman trying to learn the offense like everybody else. And so he's like, I felt like at times I let my teammates down because I didn't know the answers to questions. And that's where he has prided himself a lot this offseason on knowing the playbook about as well as Greg Harbaugh does, or like the why within everything. Because that is what I would tell you, like this generation of kid that is currently playing football has never been more interested in the why. And like, that is almost their motivation to do things is like, if they understand the why, you're going to see them give 20 something plus more percent just because they understand it.
Sure.
And that's where Drake has, you know, he's now got the confidence. He's like, if I don't understand something, he goes, I'll talk about it with Harbaugh, but he goes, before I go, then go back to him with something, I'll go to Brian Callahan, the offensive line coach, and say, hey, why are you teaching it this way? And like, what is the goal from the offensive line's perspective on this? Or Eric Kaler at tight end, what is their perspective on this? Or Isaac Frickte, whatever it may be, so that when he goes back to Harbaugh, they can put it all together and have it really fit seamlessly. Now, I'm not telling you this is going to be the greatest show on TCF Bank. It's now Huntington Bank Stadium turf. Like we got Isaac Bruce running around out here in this thing, or say it's the 2017 Denver Broncos with Eric Decker and those guys who put up an insane amount of points. But I mean, I'm writing a series right now on Gopher Gazette about who's the most indispensable Gophers, not necessarily the most talented, Luke, but like the most indispensable for success for this team. And Drake, spoiler, is going to be number one on the list. Because it's just, if he's great and you have a great quarterback, I mean, you just have the ability to be in so many games, which is part of why, to me, Minnesota won 8 games last year. Was Drake Lindsey either didn't make the play to kill you, to keep you in the game, or when the game was on the line, I mean, he made the throws. Again, I think about, like, again, the Michigan State one where he takes off, wins to the corner, or he makes the throw against New Mexico. I mean, that is something that you can't necessarily teach. And that's what, again, Drake's got all the physical talent in the world. But it's, for me, now that he's in his second year as the starter with Harbaugh, year 3 overall, they know each other like peas and carrots. Okay.
Okay.
Can this thing hum a lot more efficiently and like explosively? Because here's what I would tell you. Like, if you're looking for benchmarks, if you want to be optimistic on this offense that they would need to hit to be the second most productive offense, do you want to guess what they would have to be points per game wise? Okay. And also yards per game wise to be the second most productive offense overall behind the 2019 team.
Points per game, I would guess probably 25.
So the second most productive points per game offense in the Fleck era was the 2018 one, where they scored 28 points a game.
Oh man.
So if they get to 29 again, that'd be a heck of an outcome considering last year, you know, they, I mean, last year they were 20.
Yeah, that wasn't even close.
Now, what would be the second most productive yards per game wise?
Yards, I tend to think are somewhat meaningless, but I understand the point here.
Okay. It's just, as you said, as you're noting, it's so tough to, like, everybody wants to have you be able to quantify.
Yeah.
Just to have like a benchmark, and it's so difficult for me. So that's where I'm just going to go with points per game and yards per game.
I'll go with 313.
Incorrect. The second most one was, I believe, Mike Sanford's 2020 team. Now, again, abbreviated season, so maybe people want me to throw it out, of which I'm not going to disagree with you too much. They averaged 391 yards per game.
Oh, wow.
Now,
boy, I'm not really putting a lot of confidence in those previous teams and their ability to output points and yards.
Now, last year, the Gophers averaged 293. So if they go up by 100 yards per game, we should be throwing a parade at that point.
Yeah.
And Harbaugh's going to get the contract, and Lindsey's going to stick around for another year. Mm-hmm. It'll be expensive, but we'll get into the Protect College Sports Act at a later date on terms of how the heck Minnesota's going to find an additional $25 million in the budget to pay athletes. But you get what I'm saying with this whole thing, where if you look at it holistically as we come to an end of this preview, on paper, I think this is the most talent that Greg Harbaugh has had to work with on every level, where he's got a returning starter at quarterback for the first time, where he goes from Ethan to Max Brosmer to Drake Lindsey to now second year of Drake Lindsey. What does that look like in terms of how the quarterback understands? You've also got Darius Taylor, who I think is a NFL draft pick if he stays healthy for 10 games. Now, the question marks remain behind him, but there's optimism that they're better RB2 through 5 than they were this time last year. Receiver, I'd argue, outside of Lemecki, I mean, you weren't counting on much on a given week. Like, Jalen Smith was breaking in last year. Javon Tracy was breaking in. You're hoping those two now take the next step. And then you can get stuff from, like I said, Noah Jennings on Steptoe, Hayden Moore, Quade Hendricks, whoever it may be. Tight end, I think there'll be some struggling points there, which is why I think Minnesota leans on more receivers than I do tight ends early on. And then if you're going to be good on offense, like, it just starts up front, where I think about why were the 18, 19, and 20 offenses so good. All right, you had John Michael Schmitz, Blaze Andres. Say what you will about Curtis Dunlap. He was a 3-4 year starter in the Big Ten at both Minnesota and Rutgers. You had Daniel Faalele, Sam Schluter, like, Connor Olson. You were good up front. Like, even if, you know, Sam Schluter and Connor Olson didn't make it in the NFL, them MFers started for 2-4 years. Plus, you had NFL guys there in Faalele, John Michael Schmitz, Blaze Andres was a really good player. So I look at the Minnesota Moving Company and I say, if Greg Johnson and Ashton Beers in next April's draft are both selected, boy, there's just no excuses that this line, to me, just doesn't perform. And if they perform, you're going to have a run game. If Darius Taylor stays healthy, Darius Taylor is going to elevate the run game just as is. Now, if he actually gets blocking, boy, I mean, we're cooking with fire. Like, we're cooking with gas. We're cooking with whatever your substance of choice there is. And then if that happens, it all rolls downhill to, well, if the linebackers and the safeties and the corners and the opposing defensive coordinator have to respect the run game, then our pass game can become more explosive. Now, it's not going to be easy because Mississippi State's an SEC team. Ryan Walters is Washington's defense. Like, they face, I think, 8 top 40 defenses via Bill Conley's SP Plus this year, which is a more difficult stretch than what Danny Collins has on the flip side for opposing offenses.
Mm-hmm.
But just find a run game, Greg Harbaugh. If you find a run game, this thing is going to become so much easier. But if you can't, boy, is this thing going to be a struggle again. Again, I'm optimistic that they should be able to, and then this thing could be a lot better. But that's going to be one of the things where if you go to a practice or you're trying to watch a game or have a discussion topic with the boys as you're cracking a cold one, can they find the run game, baby? That is the secret sauce.
Yeah, that will be the interesting thing. You hope that the narrative street that we have going on will actually help us help us out this season. But generally, it should be fun to see the progress in this offense and the development of both Drake Lindsey, this offensive line, as well as the wide receivers. So this was a fun episode, Ryan. Fun to learn a little bit more about this roster. I'm sure that many people enjoyed that. We will be back to talk about defense and special teams. I know people don't like to listen to you talk about special teams, but you probably will in that
episode. New year, new leaf, new me. What do you mean? Daniel DiPrato, here we come.
Yes. So that will be coming. Obviously, we will have the live recording. We will do it. That will be at Launchpad Golf in Prior Lake on the 24th. So block your calendars. And then we will also do our predictions episode. There's still a lot to come. And then before we know it, Ryan, football will be here.
30 days until Eastern Illinois, baby. All right. You've waited all year. The calendar is now showing you it's August. You've made it. Time for some Gopher football. Let's go.
Yeah, we're in the month. So, yes, do check out Ryan's work on Gopher Illustrated.
Excuse me, what was that?
Oh, yeah, my bad. Gopher Gazette. It's pre-programmed in my head. I'll fix it in time. It's only going to take 10 years to get there. So,
proud of you.
Yeah, but thanks for catching that real quick. I think I said it a different time. You didn't correct me previously, so do correct me again. GopherGazette.com. Okay, well, thanks, everyone, for listening. Enjoy the remainder of your activity, whether that be lawn mowing, maybe gardening, and maybe even potentially working out. We appreciate you joining us and making us a part of your day. So thanks for listening, and go Gophers.